The wheel of time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. In one age, called the Third Age by some, an age yet to come, an age long past, a married couple decided to start a podcast.
This is Shade of My Heart, a Wheel of Time podcast. I'm Josh, and this is my wife, Kat.
Tonight we are talking about episode 6, The Flame of Tarvalin.
Flame of Tarvalin. This is an interesting episode. We are really quite off track from where the books are. So we are flying somewhat blind, even though we have read the books many times. We're very familiar with the story in the books. The story in the show is not the same story at all.
No, it's not. But I will say, I mean, just to kind of go to the beginning of this episode and start with being introduced to Swan, that was true to the books. She was a poor fisherman's daughter from Tyr. Tyr is a town where channeling is outlawed.
Nation,
where channeling is outlawed. So that part at the beginning, I really liked.
Yeah, we never got to see that in the books. She kind of references it.
She says it.
But I really like the way that they did this. We saw that her father was a good man. He didn't send her off because he was afraid of her or hated her. He sent her off to the tower because he had to.
Yeah, well, she even says, "When can I come home?" And he says, "When it's safe for you, for people to channel and hear."
Yeah.
So I thought that was sweet. And I liked it that he said the thing about her being clever. That's another kind of throwback to the books in New Spring, which is the prequel. They often talk about how she's really good at puzzles. She's really good at figuring things out. So I just thought that was kind of a good, thing to throw in there.
Yeah, I liked that opening with young Swan and getting what she's all about. She's strong. She's smart. Mm-hmm. So we jump right from that to we see her on the Ammerlin seat.
Yeah.
Now
she looked gorgeous.
She did. She had this really crazy, gold dress.
I loved it.
Crazy stuff in her hair, sort of like a crown, but not really, and big sleeves on her dress.
She was gorgeous.
One of the big hallmarks of the Ammerlin seat in the books is a 7-striped stole.
Right.
Which I don't think we saw anything that could be
the only
a 7-striped stole.
I don't think so. The only thing is those little things on her collar. I didn't count, but I definitely saw white and a pink color that could be red. That's kind of what they were going for. Maybe it wasn't okay, make sure we have the 7 stripes, but more just let's give those colors, the 7 stripes on her without making it a stole. Because a stole does look pretty old-fashioned.
That's what I was thinking, that they probably experimented with what a 7-stripe stole would look like. And they were you know what? It looks goofy. So
yeah, and on a dress like that, it would have looked really weird.
Super weird, yeah. So symbolically, the 7-stripe stole represents all of the Aja colors.
Yeah.
And she wears it to represent all of the Ajas. So I understand why they didn't do it, but they still have reference in the show to that the Ammerlin is supposed to be impartial.
Right.
And she's supposed to be objective, not taking sides, not making favorites. So we still have that aspect that she's supposed to be of the tower of all the Ajas.
Yeah.
The portrayal of tower politics is really interesting, very strong in this episode, and we've seen it before this episode, but I think we saw the most because we are in the tower for the first time.
Yeah, with all the different Ajahs, we got to see everybody.
I loved the hall of the tower, how it looked.
Yeah, it's really pretty. The round, so that everybody's equidistant from the center.
Yep. And the 7 Ajahs all have 3 sitters sitting around in a circle.
I did notice that there's one missing from the green, and it made me wonder if Corinna is a sitter.
Yes. That has to be the only explanation that at least we can come up with.
Yeah.
Because you're right. They did have a missing sitter there. One big difference I was thinking about as I was watching this was in the books, the Aes Sedai are often described as showing nothing on their faces. Mm-hmm. They don't, or they rarely flinch, mm-hmm. and like a raised eyebrow is like, whoa, that was a really strong emotional reaction.
Right.
But I understand why they're not doing that with the show, because they're actors, and if they're all just staring stoically, it's just not very interesting to watch.
Right. I was thinking about that when, like, at the beginning, when they bring Loghain in, and the three, Leandrin, Moraine, and Alana, are standing there, and they go through this whole thing. I think they actually did a really good job of being very straight, but then mm-hmm. there would be just these tiny little, you know, an eye movement or something that you can really tell that they're affected. Because it was still if you weren't looking right at them, you wouldn't know that they made a move or whatever. I thought they did a really good job of maintaining that, like, I'm showing no emotion and still giving the energy. So I've done a little acting in my time, and that's one thing that we've talked about before, is like, even if you're just standing center stage, not doing anything, that you still have to like give off the energy of the stage presence.
Yeah.
And that's what I really felt like the ladies did in that. actually, when I was in college, one of my directors was like we had an exercise where we just had to stand there and, you know, give off stage presence. Mm-hmm. And there was the one kid in the class. And anyway, the director was like, I would pay to watch this person breathe. All through college, that was like a running joke of like, yeah, but would you pay to watch that person breathe?
That's kind of a creepy thing to say.
Yeah, it was super creepy. But the Aes Sedai all reminded me of that. And Lan, too. Like, they show emotion at the times that it's really meaningful. Mm-hmm. But even when they are giving that nothing on their face, you can see in their body language the tension. I really appreciated it.
Yeah, I think they're doing a really good job. Another interesting thing in the books, and they actually reference it in this episode, is Aes Sedai have shawls. And Swan mentions how many years since you've taken the shawl.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
But none of them were wearing shawls.
Yeah, and in the books they always wear them when they're sitting.
They always wear them on formal occasions, mm-hmm. yeah. So, again, maybe it's the old-fashioned thing.
Yeah.
Maybe they experiment and they're like, eh, we don't really like the way that looks. But they don't have any shawls in this. I thought Loghain was crushing it.
Oh, man.
In this episode. I mean, yeah. He's gentled. So that means that he's a broken man inside. He does not want to live. And so his strategy is, make her so mad she kills me.
Yep.
And so he just, like, insults the Amyrlin to her face, saying that she's weak and nobody is respecting her. And, I mean, I think he's really trying to make her mad so she kills him.
And then when she's like, yeah, I'm not going to be so easily fooled.
Your punishment is you get to live.
You're going to live right here. We're going to watch
Ooh.
You. Yeah.
And then he leaves, dragged out, screaming, kill me, kill me. Ah! Now, the only thing I didn't like about that scene is I wish that they had used the Tower Guard.
Like the warders or something?
Not the warders. So in the book, there's like men that aren't warders, that are soldiers, called the Tower Guard. Yeah. And they would do something like that. They would take a prisoner in, you know, strong men. And this, they had these girls that at first I thought that they were accepted, which is like students training to be Aes Sedai.
Yeah.
But I don't think
Yeah, it made it seem like they are the Tower Guard.
Yeah, and that's...
It would have been nice to have at least to have like mixed genders, like not all women. I don't know why they had them all women. Because obviously men are welcome in the Tower because of the warders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wish that they had done the Tower Guard proper.
Yeah.
But that's all right. Whatever. Yeah. We also got to see Matt and the dagger.
Oh, man. Yeah, that happens off scene, right? In the books?
No.
We do see it?
In Camelon.
I know it's totally different, but... Yeah, that's right. Well, anyway, I loved that part. I loved him, it all coming out of his mouth and like they twisting around.
They did a great job of visually showing it being drawn out of him.
It's so gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that Matt's fine now.
Yeah. I mean, mostly. I don't know. He seemed okay, but then like the fact that he wouldn't follow them into the gate at the end.
Yeah, yeah, so maybe there's still something there, but we just didn't really get a lot from him. Perrin got like almost nothing.
I know, he's like laying on his side, getting his back healed, and that's about it.
That's about it. And then
he's like one line at the end.
Yeah. So
poor guy.
The show is definitely giving way more attention to the ladies.
Yeah.
But
well, especially today. Today was a big.
Yeah, today was like the men were sort of there sometimes.
Yeah.
Rand got almost nothing.
Mm-hmm. Matt got almost nothing except for the healing part.
Yeah, Matt got almost nothing.
But that's okay. There was that one episode where it was like Matt and Tom and Rand, and
yeah,
we didn't really get much of any of the girls. We got a little bit of Egwene with the Tinkers, but. Yeah. That's fine. They can, you know, it's like I read something about making television shows, and it says that you should have like one main story for each episode and then one like kind of side story.
B story.
Yeah, so it makes sense that you would have one thing focused on. This time it was, you know, Moraine and what was going on with her, and so then the side story, I don't know what the side story would be for this one, I guess. The Emmons Five kids getting together.
So that
Emmons Field Five.
That brings up an interesting thing, the way that Moraine does not immediately tell them about each other.
Yeah.
That when they ask,
she just said, I have eyes and ears. I'll know.
Yeah, they'll be okay. I can tell you that they're safe. Like, why would you withhold that?
I don't know. She says at the end that she can't trust them.
I think it's bottom line a control thing.
Probably.
She likes to control everything. And Moraine follows a philosophy of, unless you need to know, I will not tell you.
Yep.
She doesn't trust anyone. And she loves secrets.
She loves secrets.
She keeps secrets even when she doesn't need to keep a secret.
Mm-hmm.
We also got an interesting scene in like a bathhouse.
Oh yeah, like a sauna.
Sauna kind of thing. You really liked this scene.
Oh, stop it.
You really liked the costumes.
Oh my goodness. We were really I guess our nudity count. We forgot about our nudity count. I don't know how many women were in there topless.
I'm not
sure. I think I maybe only saw two sets of boobies.
I don't know.
Because most of them covered up with their
toes. I couldn't really see any of them very well.
It's good. Stop looking.
Well, you asked me to count, so how am I supposed to count?
No, you're right. Yeah, no, the light, again, I think it was tasteful as it could be. I don't love nudity in a TV show.
No, it's unnecessary. Real honest.
But if you're going to show it, you know, like the lighting was so much that it wasn't all up in your face. Like, but that was like The Witcher or something.
I liked the conversation that Megan and Moraine had.
Mm-hmm.
I think Megan seemed... I got a very strong leader of the blue
I got vibe. That vibe, too. And the fact that, like, later when she's talking to Swan and she says, Megan wants me to... Has ordered me to stay in the tower.
Yeah, that to me that, says she's the head.
It sounds like she's the head of the Blue Aja.
Yeah. And Moraine does not want to stay in the tower.
Nope.
So,
she's got stuff to do.
But Megan gave a really interesting hint of these ships disappearing in the west, which hints at I won't say what it is, but it's a big thing.
Yeah, put a pin in that.
In the books anyway. I'm assuming that they're going to do something with that.
Yeah, it's so crazy. We were talking about this as we were watching, like we can see these things and go, "Ooh, they're talking about that." But it might just be like a little, you know, like a
Easter egg
for us, that maybe they do never explore that. But as a book reader, we can go, oh, I know what they're talking about.
Yeah, we just don't really know what plot lines are going to have and which ones they will cut. So that's an interesting dynamic there.
Yeah.
So another super interesting thing to me was the way Egwene totally sold Perrin out with the wolves.
Oh,
like to Moraine, she was just
But she didn't know. I don't. you know, she was just like, I'm worried about him, and she thinks she can trust, because that's something that I think is, I like that Egwene, we're seeing Egwene is like, she's all for Moiraine. She's all for the tower.
Yeah, she has so, way more trust in Moiraine than any of the other Emmons.
Definitely.
By like a long shot. The other ones, Perrin's not, but the others are like actively distrustful
of
her. Especially Nynaeve is like hateful towards her. But Egwene is like, I want to be
rings. Yeah, Moiraine. She really likes, she's all about the tower. She wants to become an Aes Sedai now. And I really like that we're seeing that in her. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
But that being said, I think she does trust Moiraine, which is why she started telling him about Perrin and the wolves.
Definitely.
But Moiraine is like, don't trust anybody. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if they'll make something of that, but Perrin, at least in the books, does not want people to know.
Right.
About his wolf connection.
Right.
So,
Well, and the other thing you mentioned this last time, I don't know if we talked about this in our actual podcast, though. Perrin's eyes went gold and then back.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something in the books that his eyes, once they went golden, they were golden forever.
Yeah.
And so he would, like, keep his eyes down a lot because he didn't want anybody to notice.
Yeah.
But in this one, if they just flash golden, it's easier for him to hide what's going on.
Yeah. Seems like when he's communicating with the wolves, that's when they go gold.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a, it's kind of an interesting choice.
Yeah, well, and visually it's nice because I have been wondering if he has something going on with the wolves, how will we know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's how we'll know.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think we get a Tarangriel, glimpse in the show.
So it has to be.
We saw in the previous episodes, Moiraine had this interesting picture on her wall in her chamber, and it seemed significant the way that she was kind of looking at it. And in this episode, she channels with it, and she seems to teleport right to Swan's room, and she also has the mm-hmm. same kind of picture. So it seems like they're Tarangriel that are somehow allowing them to
teleport. It's like they're connected or something.
Now, we haven't talked about Tarangriel before, but these are objects of the power that use the power to do different things.
And you can...
The Oath Rod is another one that we saw that...
We saw one in the very first episode, too. We just didn't know it yet. At the very, very beginning, Moiraine, like, covers up that little doll thing. And I think that's probably a Tarangriel. Do you remember? In the very opening sequence of the entire series.
That's an Ongriel.
Oh, it's an Ongriel. Well, what's the difference?
An Ongriel amplifies the power.
Right.
You hold it and channel through it.
That's
and
right.
Whatever you're doing is more powerful. A Tarangriel doesn't
for
do
a specific
that. It's
thing.
A specific thing.
Okay, that's right. Okay.
And at this point in the Wheel of Time, the Aes Sedai have lost the making of Ongriel or Tarangriel.
Right. They can't make new ones.
No. So finding one is a big deal. And it's extremely dangerous to experiment with them to try to figure out what they're going to do. You could die. You could be stilled. And so they're very, very cautious about objects of the power. There's also Saongriel, which are like uber powerful amplifiers of the power that I suppose we'll see talk of those at some point.
Yeah, I don't know.
We haven't
so she yet. Goes into a room, and then we get this lovely scene where they're lovers. I'm not for it because they have a different arc in the books.
Now she's talking about Swan and Moiraine.
Yeah, so Swan and Moiraine get together, and here you see that they're like secret lovers. In the book series, I'm sure that some people are going to love this change to have this. I'm sure that they will. And if you're one of those, that's fine. I don't love it. And in the books, they do talk about pillow friends, that they're when they're in the tower, they had pillow friends, and you kind of, well, not kind of, you get the notion that these pillow friends were girls that were sleeping together or whatever. But as we go through Moiraine and so on individually throughout the books, they don't have, they were like kindred spirit. I don't know.
And they like men.
Right. And they're like, they reminded me of, they reminded me of like the Anne of Green Gables. Like they were just the bosom best friends. Yeah. Like the best of friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they got into a bunch of trouble together.
And they're co-conspirators.
Co-conspirators. There was a thing Maureen said in this episode where she's like, when did we ever follow the rules? Which I think is a nice little nugget because when they were accepted together, they would like set little booby traps and like
pranks.
Pranks on people. So I wish that they hadn't gone there to make them more than friends because they had such a special friendship.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think you're right. It does kind of take away from their like common cause.
Yeah. Because love entangles things and can make it weird.
Yeah.
So I wish that they would have kept it, that they had this, well, I like what you said, they had a common cause. So I didn't love the lesbian Ammerlin scene. That wasn't my favorite.
I did like the conversation that they had after that.
I was also, we go back to like our nudity count. We didn't see either one of them naked.
Nope.
I'm not a huge fan of, what do they call it?
Nudity?
Not nudity. Gosh, I can't think. I'm not a huge fan of like these crazy sex scenes like you'll see in Game of Thrones or The Witcher. So I was really very pleased when it was like they kiss and it kind of fades to black and then pick up, like, you know what happened. They don't need to show us. Let's keep more story. And
yeah.
So, but yes, I did. Their conversation was really, really good.
Yeah. It shows that they're a little uncertain. They don't really know what's going on. They're trying to figure out what to do. They still don't know who the dragon is. Moraine floats this really interesting theory about a multi-headed dragon.
Yeah.
You know, one soul and multiple bodies, which
Swan thought it was kind of dumb.
I really hope they don't.
She was like, why would the world do that? That sounds stupid.
Yeah. But the Emmons Fielders are connected.
Mm-hmm.
And their lives are very much intertwined. But it's not one soul and four or five bodies. That's
right.
Very, very weird.
Right.
Here's something. Swan mentioned that she kept having dreams about the Dark One and the Eye of the World.
Mm-hmm.
And basically her dream is why Moraine decides that they need to go. So I wonder, does that mean that in the show, Swan is a dreamer? Because in the books, she is definitely not a dreamer.
Mm-mm.
A dreamer is someone who dreams true dreams that predict the future.
Right.
Warn of some danger or something. So maybe
it was enough to make them all go, oh, we need to
go to the Eye of the World.
Go to the Eye.
Now, I get the feeling that the Eye of the World in the show is not going to be the same as the Eye of the World in the book.
Right.
But we haven't seen it yet in the show.
Right. So I think we just don't, I don't think we talk about it yet. Let's wait until the next episode is them going through the ways. And then the final episode of the season is called The Eye of the World.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Can we talk about the ways a little bit?
Ooh, yeah.
I don't think I like at least the way gate.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't really seen much in the ways. The little bit that we saw looks fine. It's dark and scary. But the way gates in the books are able, anyone can open one. You don't have to be able to channel.
Yeah.
You have to just move the special leaf and then the way gate opens. And you can walk through. And in the show, Moraine channels and opens the gate that way, and they look completely different in the show and
different
in the book.
This was beautiful.
It was great.
Visually, it was stunning.
I hate the way she opens it.
Yeah.
Because if it has to be opened with channeling, that breaks down a lot of plot points with the way gates.
Right. That we can't really talk about.
So I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
Of our first glimpse here.
And I will say this about it because I'm also like, look on the bright side type of person. I'm a devil's advocate. So there have been some things through these first six episodes that I didn't care for. And I would go, ugh, why this? Ugh, why that? And they actually spoke on it later.
Yeah, so maybe
like, they'll Balda with the hands.
Yeah, maybe they'll fix this
Yeah. Somehow. Vivalda had said initially, or maybe not said, but he cut off that the yellow's hands. And then he says something to Egwene about, I was told that they don't need their hands to channel, but like he doesn't believe it. But it at least gave us that like, oh, he thinks it, even though it might not be true.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this will get...
She thinks that you have to channel, but maybe you don't actually.
Right, maybe. Maybe that's how she knows to open the gate.
Yeah.
And maybe she doesn't even know there's another way, but she might find out from Loyal later or something.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and... I didn't like it, but I'm not going to say it's ruined the show for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I didn't like it. I'm not going to stop watching.
Right.
But I didn't like it that particular
Yeah,
beat.
It didn't really make a whole lot of sense. Unless it's something like that. Unless it's like, that's how she knows to open them.
She doesn't know you just have to push A, B, A.
Right. Up, down.
Yeah.
Jump.
Yeah, that's right. We also got an interesting meeting with Swan, Egwene, and Nynaeve.
Oh, yeah, we'll back it up a little.
Orchestrated by Moraine, where we don't actually know why they met. Right when Egwene finally says, okay, what do you want us to do? It cuts away, so we don't know.
Dun, dun, dun.
But I'm interested to find out.
Yeah, me too.
What this special thing is.
Yeah.
I think that's all I wanted to talk about. Can you think of anything that we didn't cover?
I liked it that we got to see the Emmonsfield Five meet back up. I thought that was really cute.
That they were all happy to see each other. Yeah, that was nice.
That was sweet. And kind of joking around. You know, Matt was joking with Perrin a little bit. And,
Oh, we should probably mention that Matt just didn't go into the ways.
And right.
It closed with him still... looking at them on the other side.
And as soon as it opened, he's like, can I change my mind? And then he just doesn't go in. And that is definitely a departure from the books. They all go in. So I'm very interested to see where that leads and what we're doing with Matt at this point.
Yeah, I don't have any idea.
Yeah. So that's something that I am loving about the show is, you know, a lot of what we're doing in our podcast here is talking about what's different from the book. But I am loving having new adventures and... I think that the characters are pretty true to the way that they're written in the book.
Yeah.
And that's really what, you know, you go back to listen to our very first podcast, the characters are what has always really kept us
definitely
interested. So I like it. I like, even if it's changes that I don't like, I've still been like, okay, I can see what you're doing for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that we can, having read this book series several times in the last 15 years, we can still get excited about what's going to come next. What's going to happen? We have no idea.
Yeah.
Every time I read the books, Matt went through the Waygate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, wait a minute. It has never happened like this before. Now what? So I'm excited.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I'm locked in.
Oh, and we are going to give away a free book because our Facebook page has reached 100 followers or likes or whatever it is that we said we were going to do. So we're going to give away a free book. Stay tuned. We're going to play a little ad here just to tell you guys about Anchor, which is our podcast platform that we use. And don't go away because we're going to do our free book giveaway. All right. A big thank you to everyone. Thank you for following us on Facebook. We actually do have an Instagram now, so you can check that out too. We have picked a winner of book one, The Eye of the World, and it is Lydia from North Carolina. So Lydia, I will send you a message on Facebook and get your address. Thank you so much. You are going to get a Christmas present from us, and I hope you enjoy it.
May you always find water and shade.